Namaste, Jema. I'm coming from Sri Aurobindo Ashram, Pondicherry, to the larger Sri Aurobindo Ashram, which is extending into the whole world. And Rajiv Bhai has not given me any subject. So we can either take up the universal subject. There is one universal subject, and that is man is preoccupied with himself. Whenever there is a little time, we are thinking about ourselves. But let us go a little deep into who we are. That's a universal subject. Who am I, as they say? Not all are fortunate to have this question, because not all are fortunate to confront failures. It's only when we meet the challenges of life that the question, who am I, ever emerges. What am I doing here? This is a beautiful line, passage from Sri Aurobindo's poem, A Vision of Science. So it describes all that religion has given us, all that science has given us and still giving us. And then he says, as religion is passing into the background, the angel of religion speaks to the angel of science and says, you are doing marvels and wonders, but you must remember, thou thinkest term and end for thee are not. And though thy pride is great, thou hast forgot the Sphinx that waits for thee beside the way. So as we know the Sphinx story, we all know. Sphinx is the strange creature with the face of a woman, the body of a lion and wings. And it confronts anybody who crosses the Theban desert. And it has only one question to ask. And if you reply that question, you go through. If you don't reply, she pounces upon you and you are a dead person. It's a very fascinating story, and as the story goes that Oedipus is also going across and she asks the question, she or he or it, it's a strange creature. And she says, okay, tell me. Well, the question is put in a little dramatic way. Who is the creature who walks on four in the morning and two in the afternoon and three on the leg? But basically, Oedipus gives the answer, I am the creature. Every human being as a child walks on four and two and three. So the question is essentially, who am I? And Oedipus gives the right answer and he is led through. So Sri Aurobindo writes in the poem, thou thinkest term and end for thee are not. But though thy pride is great, thou hast forgot the Sphinx that waits for thee beside the way. All questions thou mayest answer, but one day her questions shall await thee. That reply, for they who cannot die, she slays them and their mangled bodies lie upon the highways of eternity. So what is that question? He says, therefore, before thou wouldst answer, you are doing marvelous thing. Therefore, if thou wouldst live, answer first this one thing. Who art thou in this dungeon laboring? So that is the question, that who am I? So as long as life is beautiful, this question doesn't confront us. But either when there is a challenge or, as I said, if you are very fortunate to face failures, there is a writing of aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, O misfortune, blessed art thou, for thou hast shown me the face of my beloved. Or even if life is beautiful, one day we confront age and then the question of death. So that's when this question comes. And so if we are fortunate to have this question, then we can, you know, that's the preoccupation with myself. And this is actually, as they say, Shashwat question. Eternal question. It confronts us in one way or the other. And there have been several answers to this question. And we can take up what is unique that Sri Aurobindo, how does Sri Aurobindo answer this question? So we have one question, one answer, which comes from a very ancient Indian tale, the Upanishads, where Virochana, who is an asura, and Indra, who is a god, they both go and ask Brahma that everybody calls me, you are Indra, everybody calls me, you are Virochan, very powerful man, but I don't know who I am. What has given me this power? Beautifully, this question is answered in different Upanishads in different ways. So Brahma says, look into my eyes and see what you see. So both see what they see and they go back. So Virochan sees that his body and he is happy that I have found the answer. Me, this physical Virochan, that is the ultimate reality, that is the truth. What is there to question more? So that's how he becomes the lineage of Asuras starts from there, who think body is the ultimate reality. It's called as Deh-Atma-Bodh. I think that my body is myself. It's a straight answer, which modern science would also give us something like that. And then we build our life along those lines, that the body self is the only one. So Indra also contemplates, but he sees that the body goes through all the cycles. It's today, it's this, tomorrow it's changing. So it cannot be something so changeable. There must be a stable basis. So he goes back and asks him again, I am not satisfied with what I saw. So Brahma says, look deeper. He goes and it seems that 108 times he comes back. He says, I am not satisfied with the answer. So what is the answer? Finally, the answer that he gives is related even more beautifully in another sub-story. So the sub-story is from Chandogya Upanishad, where Sri Krishna goes to Rishi Ghor Angiras. I'm not sure if many of us have heard this story of how Sri Krishna got the initiation. So he goes to Rishi Ghor Angiras and he says that I want self-knowledge before I can start my mission. Impossible. So he says, tells him only three things. He gives him the mantra. First he tells him, 12 years you have to go through. Not all are adhikari of getting this knowledge. 12 years of, you know, a certain kind of life, which Sri Krishna leads a certain kind of life. It's not easy to raise this question and not easy to find this answer. This answer is not that we just repeat. Now we know the answer, we'll repeat and we'll find it. So after 12 years, when Sri Krishna goes there and asks him again, that okay, what is the, what do you have to say? So he says, first he gives him the mantra, Tat Tvamasi. Very simple. You are that. We all know that. We all know that. We can think about Tat Tvamasi 1,000 times. It will not lead to realization. I can keep repeating, I am that, I am that. But if I am not the adhikari, I may end up doing the same mistake, that I am that means all of us are God. So whatever I am doing is fine because everything is God. So see the trick behind it. Then he tells him two more words. Sri Aurobindo alludes to this story in Essays on the Gita. Just he tells him two more words. Apart from thou art that, Tat Tvamasi, he tells him Akshitam Achyutam. We all know perhaps that famous Achyutam Keshavam, no? Ram Narayanam. So Achyutam, the unfallen one. He gives him first clue. So we have to look inside us for that element which has never suffered a fall. We know of the fall. That's a different story. I don't want to just get into stories after stories. And the second is Akshitam, the imperishable. Something which doesn't undergo decay. Now, this is an answer which comes from tradition. Who are you at your core, your essence, you are the divine. The problem is, one problem is it's not as easy to realize it without undergoing a basic purification. But even if we realize it, ultimately, this answer holds true of everybody and everything. So the thing is that it still doesn't answer my personal query. I am the divine, so is the bird, the beast, that's how the Gita puts it. Samalushta Kanchana, Pandita, Gava Hastini. Everything is divine. So is there any truth about me as an individual or not? Or is it just an illusion? Because if it's an illusion, then it raises serious questions. So we don't have a very credible answer. There are answers, wave in the ocean and wave lapsing back, giving us an impression of individuality, but it pushes the question one step deeper. Why individualities are created at all? For what purpose? So we have certain answers. One of them is that it's all the desire and ego. But how did it, why it came into existence? Shobindo's answer is this world is a manifestation of delight and not desire. So what purpose had delight to create individualities for the play, but a play where there is so much suffering, pain, evil, it abounds in this universe. So why all this? So this question of I am God, all is God, it's logical also, it doesn't require reading of spiritual literature, because obviously this whole creation would have some source. Of course, there are ways of answering it without a source. But nevertheless, even when we use the word nothingness, in some sense, there is some origin. We don't know. As an agnostic, one may say, I don't know what is the origin, but there has to be one origin. But there cannot be multiple origins, that you have one origin, somebody else has another origin. There has to be one origin, then it expands, differentiates, multiple things happen. And today we have a world full of variety. So there has to be one origin. So you call it God, divine, whatever, ultimately. So there has to be one origin. It's logical, common sense. But yes, we can question whether the origin is only material or the origin is something divine. That is easy to understand, that whatever we can experience, whatever we can hope for, whatever we can achieve, strive for, must owe itself to something in the origin. It cannot come on its own. This is what is called as the hard problem of consciousness. No? How is consciousness emerging? If it is not in the origin, how does it emerge? And if you'll be surprised, you must be knowing the answers are as tricky. They're just trying to bypass the original question that, well, it's one of the adaptive mechanism coming from nature. So that means nature is conscious. Ultimately, you're saying that, you know. So anyways, we'll not go into the heart problem, but automatically it gets solved. So whatever is there within me, the sense of I-ness, existence, consciousness to whatever limited extent, joy, everything must owe in some way to the origin. So the Indian answer of that origin is Sachidanand, truth, existence, consciousness, bliss. That is its nature. So we are all seeking for ultimately existence. So we may say, why? Of course I know I exist. What am I seeking for? What kind of existence am I seeking for? I am seeking for a permanent existence. It's inbuilt in the very fabric of a life. I want permanence. That's why the question of Yudhishthir, Kimasharyam. So since we, what is the most surprising thing in this world? The god of Dharma asks him, and also the god of Yama. And Yudhishthir says, well, everybody sees everybody die, but still I think I am immortal. Everyday action of life is as if I am immortal. It's there, like we carry it like an intuition. And when we at some level realize that I cannot be really immortal or permanent, then we want to either leave a legacy. And if we cannot leave a legacy, we can at least have a child who will carry on. It's a very interesting word. In Sanskrit, you call it santan. Santan, it's literally extending yourself. So through the child, through the genes, through heredity, through my group life, I am trying to extend myself. See, it's so much within. This need for permanence is so strongly built. Medical science is trying in its own way. That, you know, if we could make even the bodily life immortal. Because this sense, intuitive sense of permanence. So we are still seeking for existence. We are not satisfied with just as we are. And all of us are seeking consciousness, and consciousness implies both knowledge and power. Knowledge is and power, they go together. If I know about something, my action or my not acting is inbuilt. Knowledge and will are intertwined with each other. They may be divorced in real life. We may say that I want to, but I cannot. Maybe because my will is weak. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Whatever. But they are intertwined. So consciousness, we are all seeking more knowledge, more power. And we are all seeking ananda. So this is the origin. Still, that doesn't answer this question about my individuality. So you see, this answer has been given in tradition beautifully in so many stories, so many places. So is there a truth of me as an individual? So one answer is that, well, there is something called as a soul, which is immortal. But what is this soul, immortal soul, doing here? What is its business? Well, it has entered into this creation to go back. Not a very satisfying answer. If the creation was wonderful, yes, we came on a holiday, had a good time, met a few friends, all was wonderful, and we went back consciously. Just dropped the body very consciously. Well, done. I had to wear this apron dress. It's like when a surgeon goes into the operation theater or radiologists go, they have to wear a, you know, some kind of a shield. So that we understand, but we should be conscious that, you know, a radiologist doesn't forget that he is a radiologist and this is a dress he is wearing as a uniform, but we don't remember. So this extreme degree of forgetfulness in which we enter, and after all this great drama to say, wake up, go back. So there is an unanswered question. So Shivindu brings in this interesting answer. What is the soul doing here? Many of us think soul is just a supernumerary. There is a soul which comes with the body and goes back. Does it have a job description? Or is it just like, there is a soul, I take it as a belief, and based on my belief or non-belief, I'll be given a place in heaven or hell after death. It's absurd. Or maybe it is here to suffer the karmas. But poor soul, it's lost in ignorance. It doesn't know what karma is. As Sri Krishna himself says, what is karma, what is akarma, what is vikarma, even the wise do not know. Tangled is the way of works. Gahano karmani gati. Given that, how do we expect that, you know, the soul has entered, it doesn't have a format or some rule book. Okay, people have told, but by the time it realizes, habits are formed, ingrained, inbuilt. Now suddenly, you know, we are told your karmas. And why should it come into this creation only to experience some karmas, good or bad, get punishment and reward and go back? See, it doesn't make sense at all. So Sri Aurobindo brings in this very interesting new element. So he brings in this element that the soul is not just a supernumerary entering and going back, entering and going back. It has a purpose. It has a function. And its function is, number one, to turn us constantly. Soul is a portion of the divine. It knows the divine always. Even when it is lost, it's like somebody in a prison. Yet remembers that, well, I am basically a king or a prince. I am in prison. But if he remembers that I am a prince, he wants to be out of the prison. If he doesn't remember it, he will be fine and happy and satisfied. It's a real life story of Mr. XYZ, now a very famous, founder of a IT company with connections in UK. So I think that's more than specified. So he believed in socialism and communism till he got caught in Bulgaria and he was put in a little prison. Not a prison, I mean like makeshift prison for 2 days, and he kept pleading and nobody would let him go. Then India had good relations that time, and based on that he was released. He said, I forgot all about all that I had heard. So When you remember, when we remember what's my origin, then you try to come out of that state. So first thing that the soul does is that it turns us towards truth and light and God and freedom and immortality. That's its first function. So we can see humanity in two layers. They are not two different types. We should not, that's a racist comment, but evolving layers means what is here will one day be here. What is here was one day here. So the first is where one is happy in the prison, forgotten. Prison is nice because everything is provided. Yes, prison is not that bad. If you have nowadays prison reforms, you don't have to work, good facilities, you have cell phones, some prisons. So everything is there. Imagine a very good prison, why would you want to? But this element, the soul, will not let you be at rest in prison. So it keeps seeking. So that which aspires in us is the soul. It's a very important function. A time comes when the soul wakes up. So there is a time when it is lost in the crypt of ignorance. It doesn't seek. And then a time comes when it seeks. It's a hurry. Why have you put me in the cradle? I am the prince. So all the managers and the ministers come. No, 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 you be in the cradle. We are signing on your behalf. No, no, no. I am grown up now. So who are these ministers? The mind, the vital nature, the physical. They are signing on his behalf. Soul is sleeping in the cradle. It cannot be slain. See, the story of Krishna gets a new dimension. Born in the prison, yet free, full of delight. So there are people who are on his behalf doing things, and then slowly it's the conquest of the soul over the great adversary. The adversary is the ego. So it, as it grows, it wants to be free from the prison. So what happens that it is lost in ignorance and suddenly one day it wakes up? How come? So here Sri Aurobindo brings in this very beautiful new element, that the soul is not just a supernumerary, it is growing. Just as we grow physically, we grow emotionally, we grow intellectually, all these hopefully. So there is this soul which is also growing through birth, death, rebirth. It's not just a tribunal of reward and punishment. I mean, who would pray to God who is busy rewarding and punishing us? He has better business, I'm sure. So the soul is growing through life and death and rebirth. And while in the beginning, it may be good for it to take it that it's a tribunal of justice, but that's not the secret. It's like a child, his teacher tells him that, you know, you have made a mistake, you have to correct it and write it 100 times. See, this used to be there, now it is all gone. So what happens? You don't know how to write. So you have the typing on computer, nobody to correct you, because auto-corrected. And sometimes in a very silly way. I have taken some. You type a word, great, and the suggestion is something else. I don't want to name it. And if you, by mistake, just continue, you'll make a blunder. See, that's the problem. But when the teacher told us that you need to correct it and write it 10 times, so the child may feel it's a punishment. Oh, my teacher is. But what is the teacher's heart? It's a heart of love. He is trying to make us perfect, free of error. So the soul is in the journey towards the perfection it can become. That perfection is the divine perfection. Inherent within it, as a seed, tree is inherent in a seed. So the soul is a seed which must through all this journey grow into the tree. And what is that seed of the divine? So each one of us is potentially the divine, which must grow into the fullness of the divine. So if just by saying that I am God, it doesn't serve the full purpose. I realize my essence, fine. But I have to bring out, manifest. So Shobindo brings this wonderful new element. What are we here for in the world? It's not an illusion, Maya, in the sense that it's an unreal thing. It is Maya in the sense that it's limited and hence distorted. Maya means that. Matra, Mata, all the words related to Ma, Dhatu. Maya stands for limiting and also for widening. Interesting word it is. So you have Vidyamai Maya and Avidyamai Maya, but not going into that. So at one level it limits, and because we are limited there is distortion, because we always carry the sense of the limitless. The one word with which Sri Krishna is described in the Mahabharata, I love to, you know, recount it. Only one word he has used. Later on in Bhagavad, Vyas Rishi describes him with such wonderful divine element. But in the Mahabharata he is aparimeya, don't try to measure him, he is measureless. One word. So we all at some level feel the push of limitations, but deep inside we want to break free the sense of the limitless. So Maya creates both these things. It becomes the bondage, it becomes the liberation, step by step. So the soul, as it grows, it seeks this divine perfection. After all, that's why we suffer. I want my parents to be perfect. They are not, so I suffer. Then I believe my friend will be perfect. He or she is not, so I suffer. Then I believe my husband or wife would be perfect. Obviously not, so I suffer. I believe, okay, all these people have failed me. My son or daughter will certainly be perfect. So by the time we grow up, okay, done with it. At least let me try to find, can I become perfect? Now we have raised the right question. The only person who is in our charge is ourselves. So there is a divine perfection which we seek, and this impulse has come to man, this dream. Man is carrying for millions of years. Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his poems, he says, the Iron Age has ended and we have entered the age of truth. But that's a different subject, maybe we can take some other time. And he says that, you know, what John of Patmos saw, what Shelley dreamed, vision and vain imagination deemed, the city of delight, the age of gold, that is coming. So why? Because we are dreaming of a perfect society, perfect state, perfect condition of mankind. We may define it differently, which is okay. That's why when we use the word divine, who is the divine? Divine is the perfection we all carry within himself. See, when we look at Sri Krishna, he has 16 gunas, or, you know, you can call him Anant Guna. So there are, we conceive of a perfect state and we give the name divine. He is all love, all compassionate. And the soul is seeking, because it's a seed of the divine, so it wants to become and manifest it. So it's not just illusion in the sense of non-existent reality. It's illusion in the sense of it is something, but not what it seems. In that sense, it's limited, but something else. Then there is the other concept, it's a leela, which is very nice. At least it's a play. So it helps us to understand it's a play. In play, you win, you lose, you get hurt, you are shown a foul card, even when you are not the one who has done something. And you may lose one day, even though you played well, you may win. It's a very sobering thought. And yet, leela is inexplicable. Why there is this leela in which there are these terrible moments we grow through. So Sri Aurobindo speaks of manifestation. There is no equivalent Hindi word, because the Hindi word is pragatan. But pragatan is not easy to, you know. And it's a pragatan or manifestation taking place through time. So it's a movement. And in that manifestation of the divine, the soul is the one single most important nodal element. Minus the soul, we will probably not even dream of perfection. There are people who don't even seek perfection, who don't seek anything ideal, who are happy and satisfied with life of eat, drink and be merry. Until we too into the dust descend, sans wine, sans song, sans singer, sans end, Umar Khayyam. So there are people, because this element is not woken up. But when it wakes up, it seeks for perfection. And so it makes life appear. It tries to explain life, why there is suffering in God's world. So it, one way is because we try to impose our ideas on God that he must be punishing us because we are bad guys. That doesn't make full sense. We never got a rule book. The perfect rule book, I mean. We all have rule books, but not the perfect rule book. If at all, life could be reduced to a set of rules and formulas, which it cannot be, obviously. So this need for perfection. So the soul is the one which not only turns us towards freedom, light, truth, beauty, delight, and then toward the divine, but it also seeks to manifest these into life, into creation. So if it has to manifest, then what does it need to manifest? Manifestation means I may have learned music or dance from Shiva himself. There is a story like that. Kathak, if you go to its origin of Kathak, the story connects to Shiva. You go to language to its origin, it connects to Shiva. Tamil from the left hand, Damru, and Sanskrit from the right hand, he solved the problem. Which is older, Tamil or Sanskrit? Shiva with his two hands played the Damru and the 14. They are beautiful root sounds. They came out. And from that, all other sounds developed. It's a very beautiful story. So I may learn dancing from Shiva, but can my feet sustain the tandav? I'll do a caricature. People do Shiva tandav. they perform on stage, they sing. But is it the same thing? That is the difference. Why? Because the instruments are limited. Even if my mind is filled with light, when it comes to expressing that light, speech is limited, thought is limited. Heart, it can feel that divine love, even if it feels. To manifest divine love is so difficult. Even to experience it is so difficult. Because heart is limited. It cannot look beyond its eye and mind. But to express the divine love and its sweetness, even if a life experiences the divine force flowing through it, still the instrument, the body can break down. See some of these great ones, how they came. They spoke and they went. Came, saw, conquered. They conquered. But the body could not bear. Look at Swami Vivekananda. 39 years. Sri Ramakrishna. 58 years. Even Sri Aurobindo. 78. Many of them, tremendous power they carried inside. Of whatever level, we are not talking about that. That's a different subject. There is a possibility of prolonging life, but that's not the subject. So, but we are talking about a human race, not an individual. So we cannot, beyond a point, our mind, brain, body, heart is limited. So if we have to manifest the brain, the divine light, freedom, not just experience in trance. In trance we experience delight. When we are alone, withdrawn, we experience that love for the divine, some kind of illumination, peace. But in the Kurukshetra, in the battlefield of life, how we can manifest it? So that is the ultimate soul's possibility, to manifest all the potential of the divine in creation. So it can become an individual nodal point to manifest the divine. Therefore, the soul as an individual, that's the importance of the individual. That's why Sri Aurobindo says transcendent, universal, and the individual. All three are important. The Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. All three are important. The Son is the individual psychic being. So as it develops this soul element, it grows into the psychic being. And the psychic being becomes the meeting point between the divine possibilities and the manifestation here. So Sri Aurobindo's yoga focuses, and this divine manifestation can take place fully only when the instruments are fully geared up. I may have, as I said, the best of ragas I may know theoretically. I can appreciate music if I know the ragas. But can I sing if my throat is... People sometimes ask me, Alok bhai, why don't you sing? I said, I can sing. Whether you can hear or not is your problem. I can sing, I have no issues. But whether you can take it or not, that's you have to decide. Because if I start singing, you will be caught up. You won't know whether to move out or not. When will he stop? So you see, the possibilities get limited because your throat may be limited. You may not have an instrument through which all the harmonies of this creation. See, we don't have even a actual material instrument for expressing all the harmonies that exist in this universe. Just to give one example, just hear the sound of the seas as they unroll, or the winds as they pass through. It's amazing. What is that raga? It is so soothing. Its effect is amazing. You can't capture it. That's why Shri Krishna's flute cannot be played. He broke it after meeting Radha for the last time. He played for her. She said, I want that Krishna who played the flute, not Dwarkadhish. So he plays the flute. After that he breaks it. He said, never will I play this flute again. Of course, now we have all things in the name of Krishna with flute playing, but it is said that when he played the flute, all the birds, the cows, the wild animals were tamed and the gopis came running, gop and gopis. That's a different thing than the technical aspect. So that manifestation requires that these instruments be changed to be completely tuned to the divine rhythm. Tuning is one part. And then even after they are tuned, they must be able to continue, because the divine is an infinite unfolding without breaking down. And the way to achieve that is called transformation. That's why Sri Aurobindo gives talks about transformation. Why transformation is necessary? It's necessary to manifest the fullness of the divine upon earth in creation. And this is the original purpose. Ekoham bahushyam. The one wanted to become many. But surely not this kind of many. This kind of many is... He wanted to become many. He wanted to become many means he wants himself many, many, many divines upon earth. And it's only possible when we go through these stages. First stage, stage of ignorance, then the awakening of the soul. Then it realizes, discovers its divine origin. That one may seize there and say, okay, this itself is big torture enough, done with it. Or it may go on and further and say, oh, I came here for this purpose. This eye is no more that outer eye. And then another new aspiration wakes up in it, that can I participate in the divine work? We may use the word divine work, we may use the word manifestation, we may use the word transformation. And then when it consciously participates in the divine work, which is the manifestation of the divine, through first individuals, individual instrumental nature, and then collectively more and more, then this earth will fulfill the dream. What John of Patmos saw, what Shelley dreamed, vision and vain imagination dreamed, the Ramarajya, the ideal state, the dream we all carry inside. So this is... Since you didn't give me a subject. So who am I? I am the soul in evolution. Yeah, just one moment. Which is moving towards that grand fulfillment. Individually and collectively. Individually I must discover first the divine perfection. Collectively when I participate, not withdraw, but participate in the process of this terrestrial transformation, so that this world can become a beautiful divine home.